tour, but for the challenges, but to reflect back to us who we are is one of its powerful roles. So we have beyond the actual observance itself, we find ourselves, we see ourselves in the tour as we engage with it. And that is really what we want to do today, to try and engage a little bit with the Torah, with the commandments in this way. It's an interesting batch of commandments that we've got today in the portion. It's all about bits and pieces of the building of the Mishkan, of the high priests and so on, and things that we need to be doing and what's happening in the Mishkan in that way of prefiguring the temple. And in many ways, you could look at all of this and you could say, yeah, that's right, it's so long ago and we don't have a high priest anymore. And why read this? It hasn't got anything for us, nothing for us today to speak to us. I would disagree. I think that all of Scripture is inspired, and therefore we can learn from something, all of it, that we are willing to get our heads around. Now, before we get into the nitty-gritty of it, because it is something quite basic I want to get onto, you can't fail to notice, or maybe some of you, if you don't watch the news, maybe it has passed you by, didn't pass me by. We're of course in the season, weren't we, where we've just seen all the Oscars and the famous films and who got what gone and why and so on, the annual movie Celebrity Loving, which has taken place in the States. And you know, it always amazes me, because actually although it's the Oscars and it's supposedly about the films, it is actually very little when it comes to, in terms of the way it's presented to us, about the films. In fact, there's so much more attention paid to the actors, and the celebrities on the red carpet of fame reams more being written about what these said celebrities were wearing, rather than the films necessarily they were in. I don't know whether you've noticed this, but it's like the news comes on and so-and-so in a gushing red gown and plunging neckline and this and that and the glitter and the, and it's what they're all talking about is what the celebrities are wearing. Or actually, I have to say, maybe if looking at this year's, what they are barely wearing. The trends this year seem to be definitely minimalist by anyone's understanding, I think. But this is what all the chat is about. You know, this has got pages and pages of Hello Magazine and OK Magazine and every other, you know, tittle tattle, whatever's going on. What everyone wants to know is what they were wearing and what it's all about. And this is kind of what I was picking up on as I was contemplating with the high priest, really. Because these trends are most definitely not true about our high priest and his clothes. Clothing, kind of where I'm going, but not only where I'm going with all of this. Aaron, as the first high priest, had very special garments made for him. Did you spot the one really important word in that sentence? For him. I was really quite astonished. I mean, I must have read this a million times. Aaron didn't make his own clothes. He didn't make his own garments. I don't know, there are possibly many reasons for it. Maybe he didn't like needles and threads. Maybe he wasn't skilled in making clothing. Maybe that's not how he was brought up to make his own clothes. He didn't learn this at school, like we all did if you were at school at a certain stage, where all the boys then suddenly had to do needlework at school. I remember this is like one of the breakthroughs in the UK. You know, we all learned how not, or in my case, not, definitely not, how to make clothes. I was never any good at it. But Aaron didn't make his own garments. And we're told that these garments were meant to be glorious and beautiful to behold. Did the Lord trust Aaron to do it? What were the reasons that were going on behind all of this? This is kind of what got me thinking, clothing, right? And why? Why could Aaron not make his own high priestly garments? Was he all fingers and thumbs? And maybe his sewing machine. Of course it would be. Maybe the sewing machine had broken down? And the electricity supply being cut? What was it? What was going on that he couldn't make his clothes? Others were going to make the clothes. He was to wear them. But these clothes were commanded by God. Aaron was not even allowed to design them. None of this was in his power. None of it was in his gift or his grasp to do this. All he was to do was to wear them. office of the high priest that were literally rest on his shoulders would function through, as it were, these garments, through what he was wearing, but the garments, as it were, in themselves were designed by God, created by God, I would go as even far to say, belonged to God. They were his, which were given for Aaron to wear. Each part of that clothing, that garment that he was wearing as the high priest, was designed to project a message of God's design and purpose, to project a message visibly from the catwalk of Israel to the audience of the nations. It sent a message, every bit about what he was wearing. And it's an interesting scenario when we think about it, but we don't often consider it with quite this angle, with the ramifications of all of this. God commanded the garments, defined them as glorious and beautiful, nebulous and subjective, glorious and beautiful. I don't know what Aaron thought was glorious and beautiful. Maybe it was different from the man next to him, who knows? I mean, right, each person would understand that in a different way. But then told Aaron not to be involved in the manufacture, but others skillful in design. It struck me as being very parallel with the Mishkan. Human beings built it. It didn't just drop out of heaven. It was built with human hands involved. But it was God's blueprint, his design, always, that came down. Of course we were involved with it. Of course we were connected with it in that way, in the same way with Aaron's clothing. They didn't just drop out of the sky. Someone had to make them. Human beings made them. But God's design, but specifically, Aaron was not going to be involved. Had to be someone disconnected slightly from Aaron, if you want to see it in that way, slightly outside that inner circle of himself. And this is why I think it gets really interesting. You could have just said glorious and beautiful, no. Those were true, those words were true, of course they were true, but the Lord went on to give us the detail of what this clothing, these garments, were meant to be like. And I think if we go back to our idea of the Oscars and the clothing and the spectacular costumes which everyone seems to wear at these amazing events, if there's one thing that really leapt out from the screen as I'm looking at it this year, I don't necessarily don't walk out of the Oscars, it maybe sounds like I don't, but the news bits that you see, there's one thing that really kind of leapt out from all of this. Clothing projects the individual. It does. What I'm wearing today is a semi-formal costume, clothing. It's projecting a message, it's projecting something possibly about me, possibly not, because it's not my informal clothes, but what people wear sends a message, doesn't it? It really truly does. It projects the individual. It projects their likes, their preferences, their power play, their subliminal messages they want to send, plus on top of that, any affiliations, spiritual, cultural loyalties. We're wearing these. By wearing these, we are sending a message to anyone who would see. I wear this around the town, anywhere. People who see this, I'm sending a message by what I wear of my loyalty and affiliation to God, the living God of Israel, that he is my Lord, my King, my Master in that way. My clothing tells people something about me. Why? Because clothing tells us so much about a person, doesn't it? It really does. And you know, you can be going home after the synagogue on Shabbat and you're going down the A11 or something and you're seeing all these people wearing yellow t-shirts with green stripes on them and possibly birds. I mean, you know, and you just think, what? You know? Why are they choosing to dress like that? They're choosing to dress like that because they're sending you a message. They're sending a message to other people who are roaming around the city, who are in blue and white t-shirts. They're sending a message of intimidation to those people wearing blue and white, saying, we are yellow and green. And if you know the code and you know the message, then you're in on the joke. If you don't, you probably think, what's gone wrong with Norwich? We kind of speak so much to people about the persona in all of this. In fact, it's all about the person. That's why fashion changes so much. You know, we want to connect with the latest thing that we want to send and how we want to send it and the way we wear this and that and the other. You know, I remember being amazed at many years ago now, I was in Israel, and someone's explaining to me sort of why some people wear large kippot, some people wear small, some of them minuscule like postage stamp size, and some wear to the front, some to the back, some to the side, and you know, some are knitted, some are velvet, some are this, and every single one is sending a message. It's true. Clothing projects persona. It's how we project ourselves onto others. It's all about position and status. Sometimes it's about power and how people dress. It's why the king, when he was on that throne and receiving the crown, is why all of the robes and the regalia, and every single bit of that spoke a message. It was about power. It was about being the king. Clothing. Situations, when we project ourselves into situations, attempt via soft power to control our environments in so many, many different ways. And you know what I suddenly thought with all of this then? The Lord was having none of this with the high priest. And you, ironically, you are not going to do this. You are not going to get your hands on these clothes. You are not going to design them, and you are not going to make them. This is the design which has come down. It says, even if we're giving you the design, Aaron, you are not going to make it. Because you might be tempted to begin to express yourself a little bit through, you know, we'll make this a bit longer, maybe a bit shorter, I don't like that colour of green, let's put a bit of yellow in, you know. You might be tempted to do something with all of this which would express you, who you are in this. And the details and the people who did it dispassionately, they weren't the ones going to wear it, they just got on with the job and then presented it to Aaron to wear. Really interesting when you begin to think of it in this way, especially if you expand this concept out of how we take the commandments of God and how we project ourselves through them. Ooh, that's a bit of a painful one, isn't it? This projection of ourselves, you know, it's become really common nowadays, isn't it? You know, everyone talks about it, but it's a bit of psychology which has now just has really got into the kind of the common parlance. This is projection, because it's become so well known in so many ways. You know, it may feel rather modern to talk about projection, but let's not forget Yeshua talked about this 2,000 years ago, projection. In Matthew 7:5, when he says, you know, first take the log in your own eye out before, you know, he's talking about projection. We do this, right? Why do we do this? Oh, I think so-and-so, by the way, you know, Carrie, if you're acting in this way, I think it's absolutely appalling. All that says to Carrie is, she knows more about me in a comment like that than ever about herself. Why? Because you know what we see? To go back to Yeshua, this idea of this projection of what we do. When we look at someone else, what we see in them is ourselves. Because you know what? Who do you know best in the world? You. You don't say who you. Right? And you know your weaknesses. You know, you can be a bit of a so-and-so over whatever, right? And so when you see someone else being a bit of a so-and-so over whatever, your reaction is, that's not good. And you go, judge, jury, bang, that's it. Sorted. Why? Because you think you recognize it in them, because you know it in yourself, and away you go. And you know what? You can be 100% wrong. You actually can. But you're projecting. That's what Yeshua said in Matthew 7. You see the faults of others defined through your own faults, because that's what you know. You don't know someone else well enough to actually begin to truly understand why they're doing something, the manner they're doing it, the reasons. How on earth can you know? Are you God? Of course not. But we think we know because we judge by ourselves and project that in as we go. But this projection, big issue. Not just with the clothing and how we use it in that way, which is the danger for our honour. The danger with projection is that we like then to project ourselves into the commandments and think that somehow we've got the power over them to do this. And I want to come back to that little word I mentioned at the beginning. The garments of the priesthood were for Aaron, for him. I mean, they were not just for him. I'll put it that way, you can almost hear the difference. They weren't just for Aaron, they were for Aaron. They were positively for him. There was something going on with this word for. They were meant to be there for him, to enhance him in God's way. Because the clothing of the high priest was not a projection of Aaron. It was not a projection of the role of high priest. It was a projection of God, of who he was meant to be and working through the high priest to the people. He was, God himself was projecting his own power, if you like, and presence through that clothing into the people of Israel. That's why it was detailed. It's why Aaron was not allowed to even take that clothing and begin to express himself through it, because otherwise he'd be merely projecting Aaron into Israel. Israel didn't need Aaron. They needed God. They needed the presence of God. And that's why it was so detailed, just like with the Mishkan. It was detailed because it was representing who God is. And Aaron was cut out of that journey of the clothing in that way. They were, the clothes were for him. They added something to Aaron. They added something to the high priest. They enabled his function and calling. It was a freeing of the man of Aaron into the calling and task of being the high priest. A freedom from self to become the person he needed to be in the Lord. They were for him. It's quite a powerful thought when you switch it around and understand it in that way, which is why he was removed from that equation of the actual making of it. It's a similar kind of way. I think if we put a parallel next to it, we'll get an even deeper understanding. When Yeshua said in Mark 27, he says, Shabbat is for man, not man for Shabbat. It's not just Shabbat is for man. No, Shabbat is for man. It's for you. It's actively, positively for you. It's for you in a strong, positive way. It's enabling. It's enhancing. It's enabling your function and ability. The Shabbat is for you. It's why you're here right now. You are benefiting from everything that Shabbat is. It is for you. It's why you're here. You didn't think when you rocked up this morning that you were going to come in here and think, this is just going to ruin my life. What's the point of being with me? What is this Shabbat? Of course, so you came thinking, this is going to be a benefit. This is going to be good. That's why you're here. You want to worship God. You want to hear the word. You want the fellowship. You want some cake. You want all of that. It's for you. It's really positive in that way. It adds to us, enables us, frees us from ourselves to be what we can be in the Lord. That's what Shabbat is. It is fundamentally for you. In the same way as his clothes were for Aaron. We don't live to obey the commands. You know? Shabbat is for man, for you, not man for Shabbat. We do not exist to serve the Shabbat. Shabbat is not your Lord, it's not your master. Right? It's the other way around. We are the ones who've actually been empowered by God in this way, in many ways, to use the Shabbat, to enter into it, to take hold of it, to make sure it is fundamentally for us, because that is what God has given it to us for. The commandments are designed to bring something good to us and not be our master. But it's very easy, isn't it, to then get into this kind of thinking of, okay, so it's Shabbat, so I don't do this, I don't do that, I mustn't do this. And if we're not careful, we slide into that slope where suddenly the commandments begin to master us rather than the freedom that Shabbat brings. Because if we are the ones who are forever bolting it down, if we are the ones that are forever trying to screw down what Shabbat is and, it's, and what it means and what we do and don't do, blah, 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 and the law and the sub-law, and then the appendix and the annex that goes with that, and then the sub-law will be like, if that is what we do, well, who is ruling who in that situation? Shabbat is ruling us. And we're forever dancing the tune. And Yeshua says it's meant to be the other way around. And before you just go, oh, that's what you would say, Yeshua, Yeshua, wouldn't you? Let me just pause for one moment. In the Mechilta, the Rabbi Yishmael, on Exodus 31, there's a discussion quoted. This is taken from traditional rabbinic teaching. It's a discussion quoted about the verse in Exodus 31:14, which says, Shabbat is holy to you. To you. And that means that the Shabbat is given to you and you are not given, or paraphrased, surrendered to the Shabbat. That's the essence of the discussion that's had in that place. See, Yeshua, when he was talking about this, he wasn't inventing it. He was already quoting something in many ways that was at least nascent in Jewish thinking in the first century. What rules? The commands? Or are they given to you? Are they for you? Have we got somehow ownership of this? I mean, this is where we're really splitting the head, but this is where it gets really interesting. Because surely we don't own them. I mean, the clothes may have been worn by Aaron, but they were representative of his role given by God, and he wasn't allowed to make them or touch them or tweak them in that way. There's a sense where God was always owning that, and yet it was given to him to wear. Shabbat is owned by God. It's not our day in that sense. We don't own it. We can't lay claim to this. There's no copyright on it in Israel in that sense. I mean, read Leviticus 23. The festivals and Shabbat, they are the feasts and days of the Lord. Belong to him. And yet he's given to us. You kind of feel there's a bit of tension in all of this that goes on. You see, we are not meant to be slaves to the Torah. The Torah is for us. The Torah actually sets us free to serve God. The truth sets us free to serve God. Not a free-for-all. Not just do what you want. You know, Aaron couldn't go and put a canary t-shirt over the top. It's not a free-for-all. Right? But free to serve God in the way that he's calling you to do so. Torah brings freedom if we see it in the right way, and we don't let it master us. But when it comes into our hands, we can use this, as it were, as the tool of freedom to set us free within these limitations that God has given to us through the commandments. The problem is, it's a kind of deeper issue hidden, I think, in all of this, if you've got eyes to see it. What I would call the religious problem. Thomas Aquinas once said famously, and I'll unpack it because it's a very simple phrase, but it is one which has profound implications. Thomas Aquinas said, God is not us. And what he meant by that is quite a profound thought, is that God is so utterly different from everything that we are. Everything that we know in terms of physicality and essence of things and everything, God is so utterly other, transcendent, that we mere mortals absolutely struggle to comprehend him. Now put your hand hand up if you think you fully understand God. I thought so. Well, I can't see anyone on the internet doing it, but I'm guessing not. I don't think anyone would ever claim that. He's so utterly, fundamentally other than human that it's beyond our ability to comprehend in that way. And this religious problem is about this encountering, as Israel did back in the wilderness, encountering and discovering God in our midst, and yet him being so utterly other that we struggle to comprehend and place that understanding into our day-to-day lives. And this is where it gets interesting with that spiritual-material interface, really, which is what we battle with as humans, day in, day out. Our problem is that in our incomprehension, in our inability to actually get to the epitome of who God is and as it were, almost put him in a box, wouldn't it be lovely as human beings if we could just put God in a box and we thought, that's it, I've understood him, I've got him. None of us are ever going to do that this side of eternity. You can't box God. But the problem is that what we, in our inability and in our, do I dare say, in our sheer panic as human beings, in our essential physicality of being human, is that we go back to our old project of projecting ourselves onto God, because it seems to be the only way that we can get a handle on him. It's the religious problem, that's why I call it the religious problem. We don't understand what you mean, God, but if I think I understand who I am, I think if I'm getting it right, then you must be this, so we're going to do this. But that goes back to this issue of the projection again, that we see so often. God is not us. He's not like you in that sense. We have the image of God in us. And sometimes, if we're honest with ourselves, it's a pretty dim reflection. But it is there. And maybe at that point where we think, I have the image of God, maybe we delude ourselves to think, therefore I can now therefore project myself back onto God and what he's asking me to do and what we're meant to be and how we're meant to be like and so on. I mean, after all, haven't I just been saying, the commands, the Shabbat, it's for you, it's to you, right? It's in your hands to do what you want. No. The garments were for Aaron, but he didn't have the freedom to tack bits on and do extras. The parameters were given, but they were for him. That added something to him. If he did it God's way, it actually gave him the freedom, the ability to be more than just merely human. It added something wonderful about him, which is true of all the commandments that we have. If we live them in this freedom-generating way, they bring something powerful and positive into our lives, and we begin to connect with God through them. Spiritual, material interfaces, how we connect with God through obedience, that walk of love with him. The more closer we walk with him, the greater the spiritual connection that begins to penetrate that spirit-physical interface barrier that seems so difficult to get through. You know, we cannot project ourselves onto God. We can't just say, oh, the commandments are ours, the spirituality is ours, and we can do what we want. I suspect, actually, in many ways, this is exactly the kind of motivation that drove our people to go and fashion the golden calf. They were projecting onto God. You must be like, I think you are, and I think you're like this, so let's make a golden calf, and I will worship it. It's called religion. In the worst sense of the word, religion. So we're not, you know, you've got to be careful. People get very funny about that word, and I'm careful with it. But in the worst sense of that word, the religion, and yet we see this everywhere. It's not just Christianity, and it's not just other forms of Judaism or other religious traditions. You know, all religious traditions are prone to this and guilty of this. I will put it to you, we are all guilty, all of us guilty in one way or another of doing this. Because we want to set the parameters and control what this thing is. You know, it's when people come to me and they say, Rabbi, what can I do on Shabbat? And I go, pray about it. They don't want me to say that. They want me to tell them. I don't tell people what to do. I never have, I never will. Right? The reason being is if I tell you what to do, you will become compliant unto me. I don't want that. You have to walk with the Lord. It's to him you walk, not to any human being. It's to him you will be accountable to, not to any human being at the end of your life. He will ask you, have you been a good and faithful servant, to walk faithful to the Lord, not to any man or woman or anyone in that way. Now it's not that the commandments are for you in the sense that you own it and can control and define. What we discover in all of this, as it is with Aaron, the commandments are for you, as in they are a benefit and positive addition to your life. They bring out something good, they bring out a blessing, they are a release to you in the right way to free you and transform you into the fullness and potential of who you can be in the Lord. Fits Yeshua's teaching all the way down the line, like, you know, Shabbat is for man, not man for Shabbat. Look at the way Yeshua taught the commandments, and you will see again and again and again, he's freeing, he's setting free, he's releasing, he's not enslaving and tying down and saying it's A, B, C, and don't you dare do it in a different order. You don't see Yeshua teaching that. You know, his Talmudim walking through the fields on the Shabbat, and they're grabbing the corn and they're, you know, grinding it in their hands and trying to eat, and people come and say, oh, that's work, you can't do that, that breaks that, and you're putting ABC in the wrong order, and that is an issue, that they were hungry. Boom, there goes your ABC out the window, straight away. It's not about those things, it's about the life. Do you see, can you hear that? He's not saying, oh, by the way, you've also got the power to make Shabbat Wednesday if you want. No, that is, you do not have control. You don't have the power. You don't own the Shabbat in that way to fundamentally shift it. But the Shabbat is the Shabbat that God has given. But within that parameter, Yeshua says, my yoke is light. There is a giving it to you. And there's a freedom in the Spirit to live the Shabbat in that way, and all of the commands in that way, if we want to stretch out that illusion. But what do we do? I mean, I'm sorry, we do it with human beings, and saying we're all guilty of this. We project ourselves into the commands, we project our control systems into the commands, we set things up because it's our power base, and if you don't do it this way, or we do it that way, if you want to be the in-group, you've got to do this, if not, we'll boot you out, and blah, 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 about control systems, and we see this happening in religious places everywhere. It's not new. But that is not Yeshua's way. We have a considerable attitude. I mean, even in our own community, in Adak Yeshua, we have people with all kinds of different theological understandings and bits, and of course, but to ask any of you, do you all believe in the same thing exactly? And the answer is no. And you know what? I don't care. Because that's not what it's about. You know? Give you a really interesting example, right? So you can compare that approach, if you like. I mean, people often talk about this as a kind of legalistic, it's again not a word I really like particularly, because it's got all kinds of baggage now which it shouldn't have, but you can compare that ABC approach, if you like, to Maoist China. That's quite a huge leap, but let me tell you what I mean by that. They all wore blue jumpsuits, didn't they? Right? Clothing again. And that was a choice to destroy the individual to become part of the collective. We do this with school uniforms, by the way. It's exactly the same principle. We don't want the children to express themselves. You want them to be part of the collective. And it's dressed up in educational terms because you're representing the school and blah, but you strip it all back to the clothing. That's what's going on here. We're talking about uniformity, conformity. Whereas the other flip side of the coin, where you've got some schools where they're letting the children not wear school uniform, they have what they call a dress code. No ripped t-shirts, no square words on the front of the t-shirts, right? That the skirts have to be of a modest, decent length, blah, 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 you know, no schools do this. In other words, they're allowing the children to be individuals, but they are setting parameters of freedom within that command. That's a good one, actually, because it allows the individual that freedom and space to be the person without it becoming a free-for-all where it all begins to fall apart. Because there's problems at either end of that spectrum, and there always are in our human existence, that's how we understand it. But about control systems that come through, this is how we think. When we do this, when we approach the commandments with this attitude, what we actually do is to suck them dry of the life that they can bring. And you can go home and say, yeah, that's okay, I didn't drive today, so I didn't activate the spark plug. That's good. I didn't do this, I didn't do that, I haven't done this, blah, 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 and I made sure I did all of that. And you can go home and feel dreadfully smug and happy about all of that, and you can completely miss the point of Shabbat. And arguably, you could say, you maybe not even catch Shabbat, because it's missed the point. This often comes down to our need to project ourselves into this non-tangibility of what, you know, Shabbat, the spirituality, God is spirit and not flesh and so on. You know, that interface between the two, we don't like it, we're uncomfortable with it. We try and control it, we try and get our hands on it, we try to make it make sense by forcing it into physical things in a way that we will understand. And actually, as we said often with the commandments, they're remarkably brief and lacking detail. The exceptions, high priest clothing, and Mishkan, which are incredibly detailed, because they're the real message being sent. But for so much of the rest, there's a huge latitude of space and freedom within there. We don't own it, we can't make Shabbat Wednesday, but when we're on Shabbat, God has given us that space actually to approach this day in a way that we can truly benefit to ourselves and worship Him and give Him all the glory. Shabbat is not about you, it's about God. The clothes here could easily have become with Aaron about Him. Everything has to be about our God. And you can say, but hang on a minute, Rabbi, you've just been saying that, you know, it's for you and so on. If it's a, you know, it's about the Lord, then we need to know what that's about. And instantly my response at that point is, the way you are questioning this is to say to me, control it, define it, let's get it boxed so we know. Well, I'm not telling you. But I don't believe that is the Lord's way when we're approaching the commandments. He wants us to walk with Him. It's an active thing. And you know, if a man isn't going to tell you, or a woman isn't going to tell you about what to do, the rabbi at the front, whatever, there's only one other place you can go to know what you should be doing and how you should be walking in this, and that's to Him. Hallelujah. Because that's where you should be going. And that means, there are occasions when people will come and go, I'm doing this, and I'll be going, really? You know? Well, deal with it, Rabbi, because it's offending my sense of what that should be about. It's not necessarily offending His sense. But we're all like this. And instead of me then turning around and going, bah, that's dealt with you, submit, which was the human temptation, right? Express myself through that command and enforce it. We have to learn to step back and say, they have their walk with the Lord on this, I will trust this. If it's wrong, He will show it to them. And of course, if they come for guidance, and I'm not saying you don't talk about things, but we have to trust the Spirit of God in people's lives. And that may involve journeys which frankly freak us out. But we have to trust the Spirit of God in people's lives. We are not free to project ourselves into the mitzvot, to determine them in a sense as we might wish to control, to you know, get into that space. For us, that's, this is what we want to do. It's called religious behavior, and people, we should not be doing it in that way. But we do have that freedom. And it's actually the prophets, I think, who really kind of nail it in some ways with this. And they talk about, especially with the Shabbat boy we've been talking about, Isaiah 58:13, really, I think, gets to the heart of all of this. He says, call the Shabbat a delight. And it's great, because Isaiah doesn't say, and by the way, people, here are the 39 ideas of what work is all about. He's not into that. Isaiah says, you need to call the Shabbat a delight. You need to call your plate of food that is lacking shrimp and pork a delight, and not a limitation on your appetite. It's a delight. It's about focus, it's about attitude, it's about approach with all of this. A positive approach. Shabbat is for you, for you. And so it becomes a delight, it becomes a positive thing. The kosher laws are for you. Pesach, because I know we've got Purim coming up real soon, and I know what everyone's going to be doing at that point. That's it, they're looking at, oh, that's it, guys, 4 weeks are ticking. In fact, forgive me, you'll probably even want to hear me say it next week. 4 weeks are ticking, let's get the cleaning going, let's get all the, right, get all the bread, and, you know, we do this, we say this every year. And you know what, at that point, the joy of Passover begins to be diminished. Call Pesach a delight. And approach it in that way. This is a delight, Lord, I'm bringing this to you. I want to express myself through this act of deliverance that you did so long ago and you commanded us to do. And I'm bringing all of this to you and to your table in this way as an offering, a free offering of love. And I'm expressing that love for you through my obedience. This is a radical departure in many ways. It's allowing Pesach not to be our Lord, but Pesach is for you. Shabbat is for you, not you for Shabbat. Pesach is for you, not you for Pesach. And if all you're approaching Pesach with a list of all the things you've got to do, you're already doing it the wrong way. Refocus the spiritual mind and get back onto what is really meant to be. The Messianic writings, of course, call this being led by the Spirit and not the letter. Right? The Spirit brings life, but the letter kills. 2 Corinthians 3:6. This is exactly that zone that we're talking about in all of this. That's what we're called to be. The clothing was for Aaron. It was a delight for him. Why? Because it released him to the potential that God had given him to serve God in the way he was called. It enabled. It was good for him. And the Lord made sure he didn't express anything of him or wrong in that clothing. So when we split the hair in this way, we can get into a real good deep place of understanding of what these commands are really all about. And there's no better place. And when we talk about this, like, I'm going to end on this. And it comes from 2 Chronicles. It's one of my favourite passages, which I think absolutely embodies the spirit of what I've been saying about this morning. And 2 Chronicles 30, I'm going to pick up here from 18. It was Pesach time. For a multitude of the people, many from Ephraim, Manasseh, Issachar, and Zebulun, had not yet cleansed themselves in preparation. Yet they ate the Passover contrary to what was written, the commands. They ate it contrary to what was in the Torah. Okay, so the ABC merchants are already going, no. That's not what happens. That's not what we do. But Hezekiah prayed for them, saying, may the good Lord provide atonement for everyone who prepares his heart to seek God, the Lord God of his fathers, though he is not cleansed according to the purification of the sanctuary. And the Lord listened to Hezekiah, and he healed and cleansed the people. just like that. It's beautiful. Why? Because the heart of the people was for God, for the Lord. Not an ABC. It wasn't a list. This is Pesach. And they brought that to them. They wanted to do this, and they hadn't had the time to be cleansed in the right way or whatever. This is not to throw the commandments overboard. If they'd had the time, they would have done it. It's not about that. It's the fundamental approach of how we come to the commandments. The Lord listened to Hezekiah, and they came in and they kept the Pesach. I think it's beautiful. Oh, but it gets worse, actually. Verse 23. If you thought that was bad, wait for this. Then the whole assembly agreed to keep Pesach another 7 days. And they kept it another 7 days with gladness. Oh, said Leon, look, it was bad enough that you weren't cleansed. You can't do it all again. The Torah says you do it once. And they said, you know what, we loved it so much, we're going to do it all over again. And you'd expect, would you not, at that point, for heaven to open and the fire to come down and consume them all, because they were obviously in the wrong. That's what you would expect, right? Then the priests and Levites arose and blessed the people, and their voice was heard, and their prayer came up to his holy dwelling place, to heaven, and it was accepted. And they got on with it, and they did it for another 7 days. And I think it's incredible. I mean, you know, you're not talking about moving Pesach to September, Shabbat to Wednesday. It's not that. They wanted to do Pesach. They wanted to walk with the Lord. They wanted to have that blessing of being set free and augmented and added to the benefits of walking with the Lord. They wanted this, but they were wanting it in being led by the Spirit and not just the ABC list of the letter of the Torah. You want to see it in that way. They did it twice, contrary to what was written. That's what the Torah said. The Bible says that, contrary to what was written. Blows your brain out, should do. And the Lord accepted. Because their hearts were right before him. And you know, it's one of these things that you can think, oh, but you know, I've not gone around my home, I've not found the last bit of chametz, and I don't know, is there still more? Maybe there's a crumb I've missed and so on. And you can end up sitting down at the beginning of your place, I think, already anxious, because somehow you're thinking, not done by ABC. And I think if anything comes out of a passage like that, you can see it's because their hearts were right before him. That fundamentally is what God is looking for. How are you responding to him? What are you bringing to the table? And it's not about us thinking, oh, it's for me, I can define this. Pesach, it's for me, I can define this. If they had seen, if they'd misunderstood the word for at that point, they would have reconstructed the cleanliness rules to make sure they were ready. That would have been, oh, it's for me, I can change it, I can adapt it, I can do what I want. They didn't do that. That's a misunderstanding of the word for. I said at the beginning, they are for you, fundamentally for you. That's what Pesach is, what Shabbat is, what all the commandments are. And that's why your ox falls in a ditch and you should have get the animal out, wouldn't you? So if a person's ill, of course you heal them. You're looking after your ox, for goodness sake. Of course you're going to heal someone and pray for someone and do what it says. Someone is hungry, and to be fair, we've got to be fair. You will find even Talmudic writings of rabbis, and it's often said, you know, if someone turns up at your door on Shabbat and they are hungry, even the rabbi will go in the kitchen and cook a meal. That's the real spirit of the Torah. It truly is. It's not about an ABC in that way of approach. It never has been in that way. You can't throw it overboard, but it's about the heart, it's about what it's meant to be. And it's not about you expressing you in the sense that you've got control over it to do your thing, to express yourself. It isn't that. It is fundamentally for you. That you can express who you are in the Lord, to the Lord, to serve God on a Shabbat in the right way in the Spirit. We really split the hair today, but you know, sometimes we need to get to that depth of understanding. And a simple thing like our aunt's clothing, which, you know, on the face of it, I read it, I thought, oh, this will be fairly straightforward. And I kept tripping up on that word "for." And the fact that he was not allowed to make his own garments. You know? It's like what we're expressing. It's not ownership in that way. It's always been the norm. But within that, there is that freedom to worship him, to call it a delight, to have that joyful heart in this, to want him. Quite a radical departure from a, dare we say, religious way of looking at things in that way. It's not about that. You know, the commandments reflect for us through that spiritual, physical barrier, that membrane, which will always separate the two. The commandments break through that membrane and are physical representations and manifestations of the character and nature of God. That's all they are. And I've been very careful with all. But if we understand that truth, then we will interact with those commandments in a very different way. Because what we want is not for the... We don't want the commandment. What we want is God. When we connect with any commandment, we want more of him in our hearts. Well, we should do. And what we then discover, if the commandments have penetrated that membrane that way, then our heart for God penetrates it back the other way. And we're able to go through that barrier and actually move in the spiritual realm. Even though we're still physical, we actually move in the spiritual realm. It's a powerful connection when you see it that way. Now, all hangs on that one word, "for."